is to be nourished and kept in vigour by reward. Confidence in others from ignorance of the marks of wisdom and kindness. Eloquence with flattery disposeth men to confide in them that have it, because the former is seeming wisdom, the latter seeming kindness. Add to them military reputation, and it disposeth men to adhere and subject themselves to those men that have them, the two former having given them caution against danger from him, the latter gives them caution against danger from others, and from ignorance of natural causes. Want of science, that is, ignorance of causes, disposeth, or rather constraineth, a man to rely on the advice and authority of others, for all men whom the truth concerns, if they rely not on their own, must rely on the opinion of some other, whom they think wiser than themselves, and see not why he should deceive them. And from want of understanding, ignorance of the signification of words, which is want of understanding, disposeth men to take on trust not only the truth they know not, but also the errors, and, which is more, the nonsense of them they trust, for neither error nor nonsense can, without a perfect understanding of words, be detected. From the same it proceedeth that men give different names to one and the same thing, from the difference of their own passions, as they that approve a private opinion call it opinion, but they that mislike it heresy, and yet heresy signifies no more than private opinion, but has only a greater tincture of choler. From the same also it proceedeth that men cannot distinguish, without study and great understanding, between one action of many men and many actions of one multitude, as, for example, between one action of all the senators of Rome in killing Catiline, and the many actions of a number of senators in killing Caesar, and therefore are disposed to take for the action of the people that which is a multitude of actions done by a multitude of men, led perhaps by the persuasion of one. Adherence to custom from ignorance of the nature of right and wrong. Ignorance of the causes and original constitution of right, equity, law, and justice disposeth a man to make custom and example the rule of his actions, in such manner as to think that unjust which it hath been the custom to punish, and that just of the impunity and approbation whereof they can produce an example, or as the lawyers which only use this false measure of justice barbarously call it, a precedent, like little children that have no other rule of good and evil manners but the correction they receive from their parents and masters, save that children are constant to their rule, whereas men are not so, because grown old and stubborn, they appeal from custom to reason and from reason to custom as it serves their turn, receding from custom when their interest requires it and setting themselves against reason as oft as reason is against them, which is the cause that the doctrine of right and wrong is perpetually disputed both by the pen and the sword, whereas the doctrine of lines and figures is not so, because men care not in that subject what be truth, as a thing that crosses no man's ambition, profit, or lust. For I doubt not, but if it had been a thing contrary to any man's right of dominion, or to the interest of men that have dominion, that the three angles of a triangle should be equal to two angles of a square, that doctrine should have been, if not disputed, yet by the burning of all books of geometry, suppressed as far as he whom it concerned was able. Adherence to private men from ignorance of the causes of peace. Ignorance of remote causes disposeth men to attribute all events to the causes immediate and instrumental, for these are all the causes they perceive. And hence it comes to pass that in all places men that are grieved with payments to the public discharge their anger upon the publicans, that is to say, farmers, collectors, and other officers of the public revenue, and adhere to such as find fault with the public government, and thereby, when they have engaged themselves beyond hope of justification, fall also upon the supreme authority for fear of punishment or shame of receiving pardon. Credulity from ignorance of nature. Ignorance of natural causes disposeth a man to credulity so as to believe many times impossibilities. For such know nothing to the contrary, but that they may be true, being unable to detect the impossibility. And credulity, because men like to be hearkened unto into company, disposeth them to lying, so that ignorance itself, without malice, is able to make a man both to believe lies and tell them, and sometimes also to invent them. Curiosity to know from care of future time. Anxiety for the future time disposeth men to inquire into the causes of things, because the knowledge of them maketh men the better able to order the present to their best advantage. Natural religion from the same. Curiosity, or love of the knowledge of causes, draws a man from the consideration of the effect to seek the cause, and again the cause of that cause, till of necessity he must come to this thought at last, that there is some cause whereof there is no former cause, but is eternal, which is it men call God, so that it is impossible to make any profound inquiry into natural causes without being inclined thereby to believe there is one God eternal, though they cannot have any idea of him in their mind answerable to his nature. For as a man that is born blind, hearing men talk of warming themselves by the fire, and being brought to warm himself by the same, may easily conceive and assure himself there is somewhat there which men call fire, and is the cause of the heat he feels, but cannot imagine what it is like, nor have an idea of it in his mind, such as they have that see it. So also by the visible things in this world, and their admirable order, a man may conceive there is a cause of them which men call God, and yet not have an idea or image of him in his mind. And they that make little or no inquiry into the natural causes of things, yet from the fear that proceeds from the ignorance itself of what it is that hath the power to do them much good or harm, are inclined to suppose and feign themselves several kinds of powers invisible, and to stand in awe of their own imaginations, and in time of distress to invoke them, as also in the time of an expected good success, to give them thanks, making the creatures of their own fancy their gods. By which means it hath come to pass that from the innumerable variety of fancy, men have created in the world innumerable sorts of gods, and this fear of things invisible is the natural seed of that which everyone in himself calleth religion, and in them that worship, or fear that power otherwise than they do, superstition. And this seed of religion, having been observed by many, some of those that have observed it have been inclined thereby to nourish, dress, and form it into laws, and to add to it of their own invention any opinion of the causes of future events, by which they thought they should be best able to govern others, and make unto themselves the greatest use of their powers. Chapter 12. Of Religion. Religion in man only. Seeing there are no signs nor fruit of religion but in man only, there is no cause to doubt but that the seed of religion is also only in man, and consisteth in some peculiar quality, or at least in some eminent degree thereof, not to be found in any other living creatures. First, from his desire of knowing causes. And first, it is peculiar to the nature of man to be inquisitive into the causes of the events they see, some more, some less, but all men so much, as to be curious in the search of the causes of their own good and evil fortune. From the consideration of the beginning of things. Secondly, upon the sight of anything that hath a beginning, to think also it had a cause which determined the same to begin, then when it did rather than sooner or later. From his observation of the sequel of things. Thirdly, whereas there is no other felicity of beasts but the enjoying of their quotidian food, ease, and lusts, as having little or no foresight of the time to come for want of observation, and memory of the order, consequence, and dependence of the things they see, Man observeth how one event hath been produced by another, and remembereth in them antecedents and consequence. And when he cannot assure himself of the true causes of things, for the causes of good and evil fortune for the most part are invisible, he supposes causes of them, either such as his own fancy suggesteth, or trusteth the authority of other men, such as he thinks to be his friends and wiser than himself. The natural cause of religion, the anxiety of the time to come. The two first make anxiety, for being assured that there be causes of all things that have arrived hitherto or shall arrive hereafter, it is impossible for a man who continually endeavoureth to secure himself against the evil he fears, and procure the good he desireth, not to be in a perpetual solicitude of the time to come, so that every man, especially those that are over-provident, are in a state like to that of Prometheus. For as Prometheus, which interpreted is the prudent man, was bound to the hill Caucasus, a place of large prospect, where an eagle feeding on his liver devoured in the day as much as was repaired in the night, so that man which looks too far before him in the care of future time hath his heart all the day long gnawed on by fear of death, poverty, or other calamity, and has no repose nor pause of his anxiety but in sleep, which makes them fear the power of invisible things. This perpetual fear, always accompanying mankind in the ignorance of causes, as it were in the dark, must needs have for object something. And therefore, when there is nothing to be seen, there is nothing to accuse, either of their good or evil fortune, but some power or agent invisible. In which sense perhaps it was that some of the old poets said that the gods were at first created by human fear, which, spoken of the gods, that is to say, of the many gods of the Gentiles, is very true. But the acknowledging of one God, eternal, infinite, and omnipotent, may more easily be derived from the desire men have to know the causes of natural bodies, and their several virtues and operations, than from the fear of what was to befall them in time to come. For he that from any effect he seeth come to pass should reason to the next and immediate cause thereof, and from thence to the cause of that cause, and plunge himself profoundly in the pursuit of causes, should at last come to this, that there must be, as even the heathen philosophers confessed, one first mover, that is, a first and an eternal cause of all things, which is that which men mean by the name of God. And all this without thought of their fortune, the solicitude whereof both inclines to fear and hinders them from the search of the causes of other things, and thereby gives occasion of feigning of as many gods as there be men that feign them. And suppose them incorporeal. And for the matter or substance of the invisible agents so fancied, they could not by natural cogitation fall upon any other conceit, but that it was the same with that of the soul of man, and that the soul of man was of the same substance with that which appeareth in a dream to one that sleepeth, or in a looking-glass to one that is awake, which men, not knowing that such apparitions are nothing else but creatures of the fancy, think to be real and external substances, and therefore call them ghosts, as the Latins called them imagines and umbrae, and thought them spirits, that is, thin aerial bodies, and those invisible agents which they feared to be like them, save that they appear and vanish when they please. But the opinion that such spirits were incorporeal or immaterial could never enter into the mind of any man by nature, because though men may put together words of contradictory signification as spirit and incorporeal, yet they can never have the imagination of anything answering to them. And therefore, men that by their own meditation arrive to the acknowledgment of one infinite, omnipotent, and eternal God, chose rather to confess he is incomprehensible and above their understanding, than to define his nature by spirit, incorporeal and then confess their definition to be unintelligible. Or, if they give him such a title, it is not dogmatically with intention to make the divine nature understood, but piously to honour him with attributes of significations as remote as they can from the grossness of bodies visible. But know not the way how they affect anything. Then, for the way by which they think these invisible agents wrought their effects, that is to say, what immediate causes they used in bringing things to pass, men that know not what it is that we call causing, that is, almost all men, have no other rule to guess by observing and remembering what they have seen to precede the like effect at some other time or times before, without seeing between the antecedent and subsequent event any dependence or connection at all. And therefore, from the like things past, they expect the like things to come, and hope for good or evil luck, superstitiously, from things that have no part at all in the causing of it, as the Athenians did for their war at Lepanto, demand another Phormio, the Pompeian faction for their war in Africa, another Scipio, and others have done in divers other occasions since. In like manner, they attribute their fortune to a stander-by, to a lucky or unlucky place, to words spoken, especially if the name of God be amongst them, as charming and conjuring the liturgy of witches, insomuch as to believe they have power to turn a stone into bread, bread into a man, or anything into anything. But honour them as they honour men. Thirdly, for the worship which naturally men exhibit to powers invisible, it can be no other but such expressions of their reverence as they would use towards men, gifts, petitions, thanks, submission of body, considerate addresses, sober behaviour, premeditated words, swearing, that is, assuring one another of their promises by invoking them. Beyond that, reason suggesteth nothing, but leaves them either to rest there or, for further ceremonies, to rely on those they believe wiser than themselves, and attribute to them all extraordinary events. Lastly, concerning how these invisible powers declare to men the things which shall hereafter come to pass, especially concerning their good or evil fortune in general, or good or ill success in any particular undertaking, men are naturally at a stand, save that using to conjecture of the time to come, by the time past they are very apt not only to take casual things after one or two encounters, for prognostics of the like encounter ever after, but also to believe the like prognostics from other men of whom they have once conceived a good opinion. Four things, natural seeds of religion. And in these four things, opinion of ghosts, ignorance of second causes, devotion towards what men fear, and taking of things casual for prognostics, consisteth the natural seed of religion, which, by reason of the different fancies, judgments, and passions of several men, hath grown up into ceremonies so different that those which are used by one man are, for the most part, ridiculous to another. Made different by culture. For these seeds have received culture from two sorts of men. One sort have been they that have nourished and ordered them according to their own invention. The other have done it by God's commandment and direction, but both sorts have done it with a purpose to make those men that relied on them the more apt to obedience, laws, peace, charity, and civil society, so that the religion of the former sort is a part of human politics, and teacheth part of the duty which earthly kings require of their subjects. And the religion of the latter sort is divine politics, and containeth precepts to those that have yielded themselves subjects in the kingdom of God. Of the former sort were all the founders of commonwealths and the lawgivers of the Gentiles. Of the latter sort were Abraham, Moses, and our blessed Saviour, by whom have been derived unto us the laws of the kingdom of God. The absurd opinion of gentilism. And for that part of religion which consisteth in opinions concerning the nature of powers invisible, there is almost nothing that has a name that has not been esteemed amongst the Gentiles in one place or another, a god or devil, or by their poets feigned to be inanimated, inhabited, or possessed by some spirit or other. The unformed matter of the world was a god by the name of Chaos. The heaven, the ocean, the planets, the fire, the earth, the winds were so many gods. Men, women, a bird, a crocodile, a calf, a dog, a snake, an onion, a leek were deified. Besides that, they filled almost all places with spirits called demons, the plains with Pan and Panaces or Satyrs, the woods with fauns and nymphs, the sea with Tritons and other nymphs, every river and fountain with a ghost of his name and with nymphs, every house with its Lares or familiars, every man with his genius, hell with ghosts and spiritual officers, as Charon, Cerberus, and the Furies, and in the night time all places with larvae, lemures, ghosts of men deceased, and a whole kingdom of fairies and bugbears. They have also ascribed divinity and built temples to mere accidents and qualities, such as are time, night, day, peace, concord, love, contention, virtue, honour, health, rust, fever, and the like, which when they prayed for or against, they prayed to, as if there were ghosts of those names hanging over their heads and letting fall, or withholding that good or evil for or against which they prayed. They invoked also their own wit by the name of Muses, their own ignorance by the name of Fortune, their own lusts by the name of Cupid, their own rage by the name of Furies, their own privy members by the name of Priapus, and attributed their pollutions to incubi and succubi, insomuch as there was nothing which a poet could introduce as a person in his poem, which they did not make either a god or a devil. The same authors of the Religion of the Gentiles, observing the second ground for religion, which is men's ignorance of causes, and thereby their aptness to attribute their fortune to causes, on which there was no dependence at all apparent, took occasion to obtrude on their ignorance, instead of second causes, a kind of second and ministerial gods, ascribing the cause of fecundity to Venus, the cause of arts to Apollo, of subtlety and craft to Mercury, of tempests and storms to Aeolus, and of other effects to other gods, insomuch as there was amongst the heathen almost as great variety of gods as of business. And to the worship, which naturally men conceived fit to be used towards their gods, namely oblations, prayers, thanks, and the rest formerly named, the same legislators of the Gentiles have added their images both in picture and sculpture, that the more ignorant sort, that is to say, the most part or generality of the people, thinking the gods for whose representation they were made were really included, and as it were housed within them, might so much the more stand in fear of them, and endowed them with lands and houses and offices and revenues set apart from all other human uses, that is, consecrated and made holy to those their idols, as caverns, groves, woods, mountains, and whole islands, and have attributed to them not only the shapes, some of men, some of beasts, some of monsters, but also the faculties and passions of men and beasts, as sense, speech, sex, lust, generation, and this not only by mixing one with another to propagate the kind of gods, but also by mixing with men and women to beget mongrel gods, and but inmates of heaven as Bacchus, Hercules, and others. Besides anger, revenge, and other passions of living creatures, and the actions proceeding from them as fraud, theft, adultery, sodomy, and any vice that may be taken for an effect of power or a cause of pleasure, and all such vices as amongst men are taken to be against law rather than against honour. Lastly, to the prognostics of time to come, which are naturally but conjectures upon experience of time past, and supernaturally divine revelation, the same authors of the Religion of the Gentiles, partly upon pretended experience, partly upon pretended revelation, have added innumerable other superstitious ways of divination, and made men believe they should find their fortunes, sometimes in the ambiguous or senseless answers of the priests at Delphi, Delos, Ammon, and other famous oracles, which answers were made ambiguous by design to own the event both ways, or absurd by the intoxicating vapour of the place, which is very frequent in sulphurous caverns. Sometimes in the leaves of the Sibyls, of whose prophecies, like those perhaps of Nostradamus, for the fragments now extant seem to be the invention of later times, there were some books in reputation in the time of the Roman Republic, sometimes in the insignificant speeches of madmen, supposed to be possessed with a divine spirit, which possession they called enthusiasm. And these kinds of foretelling events were accounted theomancy or prophecy, sometimes in the aspect of the stars at their nativity, which was called horoscopy and esteemed a part of judiciary astrology, sometimes in their own hopes and fears, called thumomancy or presage, sometimes in the prediction of witches that pretended conference with the dead, which is called necromancy, conjuring and witchcraft, and is but juggling and confederate knavery, sometimes in the casual flight or feeding of birds called augury, sometimes in the entrails of a sacrificed beast, which was arus piscina, sometimes in dreams, sometimes in croaking of ravens or chattering of birds, sometimes in the lineaments of the face, which was called metoposcopy, or by palmistry in the lines of the hand, in casual words called omina, sometimes in monsters or unusual accidents, as eclipses, comets, rare meteors, earthquakes, inundations, uncouth births, and the like, which they called portenta and ostenta, because they thought them to portend or foreshow some great calamity to come. Sometimes in mere lottery, as cross and pile, counting holes in a sieve, dipping of verses in Homer and Virgil, and innumerable other such vain conceits. So easy are men to be drawn to believe anything, from such men as have gotten credit with them, and can, with gentleness and dexterity, take hold of their fear and ignorance. The designs of the authors of the Religion of the Heathen. And therefore the first founders and legislators of commonwealths among the Gentiles, whose ends were only to keep the people in obedience and peace, have in all places taken care, first, to imprint in their minds a belief that those precepts which they gave concerning religion might not be thought to proceed from their own device, but from the dictates of some god or other spirit, or else that they themselves were of a higher nature than mere mortals, that their laws might the more easily be received. So Numa Pompilius pretended to receive the ceremonies he instituted amongst the Romans from the nymph Egeria, and the first king and founder of the kingdom of Peru pretended himself and his wife to be the children of the sun, and Muhammad, to set up his new religion, pretended to have conferences with the Holy Ghost in form of a dove. Secondly, they have had a care to make it believed that the same things were displeasing to the gods which were forbidden by the laws. Thirdly, to prescribe ceremonies, supplications, sacrifices, and festivals by which they were to believe the anger of the gods might be appeased, and that ill success in war, great contagions of sickness, earthquakes, and each man's private misery came from the anger of the gods, and their anger from the neglect of their worship, or the forgetting or mistaking some point of the ceremonies required. And though amongst the ancient Romans men were not forbidden to deny that which in the poets is written of the pains and pleasures after this life, which divers of great authority and gravity in that state have in their harangues openly derided, yet that belief was always more cherished than the contrary. And by these and such other institutions they obtained in order to their end, which was the peace of the commonwealth, that the common people in their misfortunes, laying the fault on neglect or error in their ceremonies or on their own disobedience to the laws, were the less apt to mutiny against their governors, and being entertained with the pomp and pastime of festivals and public games made in honour of the gods, needed nothing else but bread to keep them from discontent, murmuring, and commotion against the state. And therefore the Romans, that had conquered the greatest part of the then-known world, made no scruple of tolerating any religion whatsoever in the city of Rome itself, unless it had something in it that could not consist with their civil government. Nor do we read that any religion was there forbidden, but that of the Jews, who, being the peculiar kingdom of God, thought it unlawful to acknowledge subjection to any mortal king or state whatsoever. And thus you see how the religion of the Gentiles was a part of their policy. The true religion and the laws of God's kingdom the same. But where God himself, by supernatural revelation, planted religion, there he also made to himself a peculiar kingdom, and gave laws not only of behaviour towards himself, but also towards one another, and thereby, in the kingdom of God, the policy and laws civil are a part of religion, and therefore the distinction of temporal and spiritual domination hath there no place. It is true that God is king of all the earth, yet may he be king of a peculiar and chosen nation. For there is no more incongruity therein than that he that hath the general command of the whole army should have withal a peculiar regiment or company of his own. God is king of all the earth by his power, but of his chosen people he is king by covenant. But to speak more largely of the kingdom of God, both by nature and covenant, I have in the following discourse assigned another place, chapter 35. The causes of change in religion. From the propagation of religion, it is not hard to understand the causes of the resolution of the same into its first seeds or principles, which are only an opinion of a deity and powers invisible and supernatural, that can never be so abolished out of human nature, but that new religions may again be made to spring out of them by the culture of such men as for such purpose are in reputation. For seeing all formed religion is founded at first upon the faith which a multitude hath in some one person, whom they believe not only to be a wise man and to labour to procure their happiness, but also to be a holy man, to whom God himself vouchsafeth to declare his will supernaturally. It followeth necessarily, when they that have the government of religion shall come to have either the wisdom of those men, their sincerity, or their love suspected, or when they shall be unable to show any probable token of divine revelation, that the religion which they desire to uphold must be suspected likewise, and, without the fear of the civil sword, contradicted and rejected. Enjoining belief of impossibilities. That which taketh away the reputation of wisdom in him that formeth a religion, or addeth to it when it is already formed, is the enjoining of a belief of contradictories. For both parts of a contradiction cannot possibly be true, and therefore to enjoin the belief of them is an argument of ignorance, which detects the author in that, and discredits him in all things else he shall propound as from revelation supernatural, which revelation a man may indeed have of many things above, but of nothing against natural reason. Doing contrary to the religion they establish. That which taketh away the reputation of sincerity is the doing or saying of such things as appear to be signs that what they require other men to believe is not believed by themselves. All which doings or sayings are therefore called scandalous, because they be stumbling blocks that make men to fall in the way of religion, as injustice, cruelty, profaneness, avarice, and luxury. For who can believe that he that doth ordinarily such actions as proceed from any of these roots believeth there is any such invisible power to be feared as he affrighteth other men withal for lesser faults. That which taketh away the reputation of love is the being detected of private ends, as when the belief they require of others conduceth or seemeth to conduce to the acquiring of dominion, riches, dignity, or secure pleasure to themselves only or specially. For that which men reap benefit by to themselves, they are thought to do for their own sakes and not for love of others. Want of the testimony of miracles. Lastly, the testimony that men can render of divine calling can be no other than the operation of miracles, or true prophecy, which also is a miracle, or extraordinary felicity. And therefore to those points of religion which have been received from them that did such miracles, those that are added by such as approve not their calling by some miracle, obtain no greater belief than what the custom and laws of the places in which they be educated have wrought into them. For as in natural things men of judgment require natural signs and arguments, so in supernatural things they require signs supernatural, which are miracles, before they consent inwardly and from their hearts. All which causes of the weakening of men's faith do manifestly appear in the examples following. First, we have the example of the children of Israel, who when Moses, that had approved his calling to them by miracles and by the happy conduct of them out of Egypt, was absent but 40 days, revolted from the worship of the true God, recommended to them by him, and setting up, Exodus 32:1-2, a golden calf for their God, relapsed into the idolatry of the Egyptians, from whom they had been so lately delivered. And again, after Moses, Aaron, Joshua, and that generation which had seen the great works of God in Israel, Judges 2:11, were dead, another generation arose and served Baal, so that miracles failing, faith also failed. Again, when the sons of Samuel, 1 Samuel 8, being constituted by their father judges in Beersheba, received bribes and judged unjustly, the people of Israel refused any more to have God to be their king, in other manner than he was king of other people, and therefore cried out to Samuel to choose them a king after the manner of the nations, so that, justice failing, faith also failed, insomuch as they deposed their God from reigning over them. And whereas in the planting of Christian religion the oracles ceased in all parts of the Roman Empire, and the number of Christians increased wonderfully every day and in every place by the preaching of the apostles and evangelists, a great part of that success may reasonably be attributed to the contempt into which the priests of the Gentiles of that time had brought themselves by their uncleanness, avarice, and juggling between princes. Also, the religion of the Church of Rome was partly, for the same cause, abolished in England and many other parts of Christendom, insomuch as the failing of virtue in the pastors maketh faith fail in the people, and partly from bringing of the philosophy and doctrine of Aristotle into religion by the schoolmen, from whence there arose so many contradictions and absurdities as brought the clergy into a reputation both of ignorance and of fraudulent intention, and inclined people to revolt from them, either against the will of their own princes, as in France and Holland, or with their will, as in England. Lastly, amongst the points by the Church of Rome declared necessary for salvation, there be so many, manifestly to the advantage of the Pope and of his spiritual subjects, residing in the territories of other Christian princes, that were it not for the mutual emulation of those princes, they might, without war or trouble, exclude all foreign authority as easily as it has been excluded in England. For who is there that does not see to whose benefit it conduceth to have it believed that a king hath not his authority from Christ unless a bishop crown him, that a king, if he be a priest, cannot marry, that whether a prince be born in lawful marriage or not must be judged by authority from Rome, that subjects may be freed from their allegiance if, by the court of Rome, the king be judged an heretic, that a king, as Childeric of France, may be deposed by a pope, as Pope Zachary, for no cause, and his kingdom given to one of his subjects, that the clergy and regulars in what country soever shall be exempt from the jurisdiction of their king in cases criminal? Or who does not see to whose profit redound the fees of private masses and veils of purgatory, with other signs of private interest enough to mortify the most lively faith, if, as I said, the civil magistrate and custom did not more sustain it than any opinion they have of the sanctity, wisdom, or probity of their teachers, so that I may attribute all the changes of religion in the world to one and the same cause, and that is unpleasing priests, and those not only amongst Catholics, but even in that church that hath presumed most of reformation. Chapter 13. Of the natural condition of mankind as concerning their felicity and misery. Men by nature equal. Nature hath made men so equal in the faculties of the body and mind, as that though there be found one man sometimes manifestly stronger in body or of quicker mind than another, yet when all is reckoned together, the difference between man and man is not so considerable as that one man can thereupon claim to himself any benefit to which another may not pretend as well as he. For as to the strength of body, the weakest has strength enough to kill the strongest, either by secret machination or by confederacy with others that are in the same danger with himself. And as to the faculties of the mind, setting aside the arts grounded upon words, and especially that skill of proceeding upon general and infallible rules called science, which very few have, and but in few things, as being not a native faculty born with us, nor attained as prudence while we look after somewhat else, I find yet a greater equality amongst men than that of strength. For prudence is but experience, which equal time equally bestows on all men in those things they equally apply themselves unto. That which may perhaps make such equality incredible is but a vain conceit of one's own wisdom, which almost all men think they have in a greater degree than the vulgar, that is, than all men but themselves and a few others whom by fame or for concurring with themselves they approve. For such is the nature of men, that howsoever they may acknowledge many others to be more witty or more eloquent or more learned, yet they will hardly believe there be many so wise as themselves, for they see their own wit at hand and other men's at a distance. But this proveth rather that men are in that point equal than unequal, for there is not ordinarily a greater sign of the equal distribution of anything than that every man is contented with his share. From equality proceeds diffidence. From this equality of ability ariseth equality of hope in the attaining of our ends, and therefore if any two men desire the same thing, which nevertheless they cannot both enjoy, they become enemies, and in the way to their end, which is principally their own conservation, and sometimes their delectation only, endeavour to destroy or subdue one another, and from hence it comes to pass that where an invader hath no more to fear than another man's single power, if one plant, sow, build, or possess a convenient seat, others may probably be expected to come prepared with forces united to dispossess and deprive him, not only of the fruit of his labour, but also of his life or liberty, and the invader again is in the like danger of another. From diffidence, war. And from this diffidence of one another there is no way for any man to secure himself so reasonable as anticipation, that is, by force or wiles to master the persons of all men he can, so long till he see no other power great enough to endanger him. And this is no more than his own conservation requireth, and is generally allowed. Also, because there be some that, taking pleasure in contemplating their own power in the acts of conquest, which they pursue farther than their security requires, if others, that otherwise would be glad to be at ease within modest bounds, should not by invasion increase their power, they would not be able, long time, by standing only on their defence, to subsist. And by consequence, such augmentation of dominion over men being necessary to a man's conservation, it ought to be allowed him. Again, men have no pleasure, but on the contrary a great deal of grief in keeping company where there is no power able to overawe them all. For every man looketh that his companion should value him. At the same rate he sets upon himself, and upon all signs of contempt or undervaluing, naturally endeavours, as far as he dares, which amongst them that have no common power to keep them in quiet is far enough to make them destroy each other, to extort a greater value from his contemners by damage, and from others by the example. So that in the nature of man we find three principal causes of quarrel. First, competition. Secondly, diffidence. Thirdly, glory. The first maketh men invade for gain, the second for safety, and the third for reputation. The first use violence, to make themselves masters of other men's persons, wives, children, and cattle. The second, to defend them. The third, for trifles, as a word, a smile, a different opinion, and any other sign of undervalue, either direct in their persons, or by reflection in their kindred, their friends, their nation, their profession, or their name. Out of civil states there is always war of everyone against everyone. Hereby it is manifest that during the time men live without a common power to keep them all in awe, they are in that condition which is called war, and such a war as is of every man against every man. For war consisteth not in battle only, or the act of fighting, but in a tract of time, wherein the will to contend by battle is sufficiently known, and therefore the notion of time is to be considered in the nature of war, as it is in the nature of weather. For as the nature of foul weather lieth not in a shower or two of rain, but in an inclination thereto of many days together, so the nature of war consisteth not in actual fighting, but in the known disposition thereto, during all the time there is no assurance to the contrary. All other time is peace. The incommodities of such a war. Whatsoever, therefore, is consequent to a time of war, where every man is enemy to every man, the same is consequent to the time, wherein men live without other security than what their own strength and their own invention shall furnish them withal. In such condition there is no place for industry, because the fruit thereof is uncertain, and consequently no culture of the earth, no navigation, nor use of the commodities that may be imported by sea, no commodious building, no instruments of moving and removing such things as require much force, no knowledge of the face of the earth, no account of time, no arts, no letters, no society, and, which is worst of all, continual fear and danger of violent death, and the life of man solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. It may seem strange to some man that has not well weighed these things, that nature should thus dissociate and render men apt to invade and destroy one another, and he may therefore, not trusting to this inference made from the passions, desire perhaps to have the same confirmed by experience. Let him therefore consider with himself when taking a journey. He arms himself and seeks to go well accompanied. When going to sleep he locks his doors, when even in his house he locks his chests, and this when he knows there be laws and public officers armed to revenge all injuries shall be done him. What opinion he has of his fellow subjects when he rides armed, of his fellow citizens when he locks his doors, and of his children and servants when he locks his chests. Does he not there as much accuse mankind by his actions as I do by my words? But neither of us accuse man's nature in it. The desires and other passions of man are in themselves no sin, no more are the actions that proceed from those passions, till they know a law that forbids them, which till laws be made they cannot know, nor can any law be made till they have agreed upon the person that shall make it. It may peradventure be thought there was never such a time nor condition of war as this, and I believe it was never generally so over all the world. But there are many places where they live so now, for the savage people in many places of America, except the government of small families, the concord whereof dependeth on natural lust, have no government at all, and live at this day in that brutish manner, as I said before. Howsoever, it may be perceived what manner of life there would be where there were no common power to fear by the manner of life which men that have formerly lived under a peaceful government use to degenerate into in a civil war. But though there had never been any time wherein particular men were in a condition of war one against another, yet in all times kings and persons of sovereign authority, because of their independency, are in continual jealousies and in the state and posture of gladiators, having their weapons pointing and their eyes fixed on one another, that is, their forts, garrisons, and guns upon the frontiers of their kingdoms, and continual spies upon their neighbours, which is a posture of war. But because they uphold thereby the industry of their subjects, there does not follow from it that misery which accompanies the liberty of particular men. In such a war nothing is unjust. To this war of every man against every man, this also is consequent, that nothing can be unjust. The notions of right and wrong, justice and injustice, have there no place. Where there is no common power, there is no law. Where no law, no injustice. Force and fraud are in war the two cardinal virtues. Justice and injustice are none of the faculties, neither of the body nor mind. If they were, they might be in a man that were alone in the world, as well as his senses and passions. They are qualities that relate to men in society, not in solitude. It is consequent also to the same condition that there be no propriety, no dominion, no mine and thine distinct, but only that to be every man's that he can get, and for so long as he can keep it. And thus much for the ill condition which man by mere nature is actually placed in, though with a possibility to come out of it, consisting partly in the passions, partly in his reason. The passions that incline men to peace. The passions that incline men to peace are fear of death, desire of such things as are necessary to commodious living, and a hope by their industry to obtain them. And reason suggesteth convenient articles of peace, upon which men may be drawn to agreement. These articles are they, which otherwise are called the laws of nature, whereof I shall speak more particularly in the two following chapters. Chapter 14. Of the First and Second Natural Laws, and of Contracts. Right of Nature what? The right of nature, which writers commonly call jus naturel, is the liberty each man hath to use his own power as he will himself, for the preservation of his own nature, that is to say, of his own life, and consequently of doing anything which in his own judgment and reason he shall conceive to be the aptest means thereunto. Liberty what? By liberty is understood, according to the proper signification of the word, the absence of external impediments, which impediments may oft take away part of a man's power to do what he would, but cannot hinder him from using the power left him according as his judgment and reason shall dictate to him. A law of nature what? Difference of right and law. A law of nature, lex naturalis, is a precept or general rule found out by reason, by which a man is forbidden to do that which is destructive of his life, or taketh away the means of preserving the same, and to omit that by which he thinketh it may be best preserved. For though they that speak of this subject use to confound jus and lex, right and law, Yet they ought to be distinguished, because right consisteth in liberty to do or to forbear, whereas law determineth and bindeth to one of them, so that law and right differ as much as obligation and liberty, which in one and the same matter are inconsistent. Naturally, every man has right to everything, the fundamental law of nature. And because the condition of man, as hath been declared in the precedent chapter, is a condition of war of everyone against everyone, in which case everyone is governed by his own reason, and there is nothing he can make use of that may not be a help unto him in preserving his life against his enemies, it followeth that in such a condition every man has a right to everything, even to one another's body. And therefore, as long as this natural right of every man to everything endureth, there can be no security to any man, how strong or wise soever he be, of living out the time which nature ordinarily alloweth men to live. And consequently, it is a precept or general rule of reason that every man ought to endeavour peace as far as he has hope of obtaining it, and when he cannot obtain it, that he may seek and use all helps and advantages of war. The first branch of which rule containeth the first and fundamental law of nature, which is to seek peace and follow it. The second, the sum of the right of nature, which is, by all means we can, to defend ourselves. The second law of nature. From this fundamental law of nature, by which men are commanded to endeavour peace, is derived this second law, that a man be willing, when others are so too, as far forth as for peace and defence of himself he shall think it necessary, to lay down this right to all things, and be contented with so much liberty against other men as he would allow other men against himself. For as long as every man holdeth this right of doing anything he liketh, so long are all men in the condition of war. But if other men will not lay down their right as well as he, then there is no reason for any one to divest himself of his. For that were to expose himself to prey, which no man is bound to, rather than to dispose himself to peace. This is that law of the gospel. Whatsoever you require that others should do to you, that do ye to them. And that law of all men, quod tibi fieri non vis alteri ne feceris. What it is to lay down a right. To lay down a man's right to anything is to divest himself of the liberty of hindering another of the benefit of his own right to the same. For he that renounceth or passeth away his right giveth not to any other man a right which he had not before, because there is nothing to which every man had not right by nature, but only standeth out of his way, that he may enjoy his own original right without hindrance from him, not without hindrance from another, so that the effect which redoundeth to one man by another man's defect of right is but so much diminution of impediments to the use of his own right original. Renouncing a right, what it is, transferring right what? Obligation, duty, injustice. Right is laid aside either by simply renouncing it or by transferring it to another. By simply renouncing, when he cares not to whom the benefit thereof redoundeth. By transferring, when he intendeth the benefit thereof to some certain person or persons. And when a man hath in either manner abandoned or granted away his right, then he is said to be obliged or bound not to hinder those to whom such right is granted or abandoned from the benefit of it, and that he ought, and it is his duty, not to make void that voluntary act of his own, and that such hindrance is injustice and injury as being sine jure, the right being before renounced or transferred, so that injury or injustice in the controversies of the world is somewhat like to that which in the disputations of scholars is called absurdity. For as it is there called an absurdity to contradict what one maintained in the beginning, so in the world it is called injustice and injury, voluntarily to undo that which from the beginning he had voluntarily done. The way by which a man either simply renounceth or transferreth his right is a declaration.